I'm very happy now to welcome to the Radio Cafe Tia Lesson. She is co-producer and co-director of the documentary Citizen Coke. It opens this Friday at the CCA, the Center for Contemporary Arts, here in Santa Fe. And there's a special screening tonight at 7:30, which is a benefit for KSFR. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thanks so much for having me, Mayor Schroeder.
So the Koch brothers, it seems like the United States divides into people who are extraordinarily aware of them and people who've never even heard of them. Who are these brothers?
Well, in fact, I think that there's even a greater divide. There's a divide between people who are wealthy and in the same wealth bracket as the Koch brothers, and then the rest of us. And the divide there is more like 99% versus the 1% or 0.001%. The Koch brothers, David and Charles Koch, have a net worth of about $100 billion collectively. They're actually taken together. Their net worth makes them the richest men in the world. They have more money together than Bill Gates, than Warren Buffett. They are, you know, fabulously wealthy, wealthier than the Walton family. And they've made their money. Well, first of all, they inherited a big chunk of change from their dad, who founded Koch Industries. And Koch Industries has grown to be the second largest private company in this country. And they have a whole bunch of different subsidiaries. They have fertilizer plants. They own Georgia Pacific, which has consumer wood products and tissue paper, tissue bath paper, paper towels, Brawny Line, Angel Soft. They also own pipelines and refineries and coal firing plants, and they're very, very big in the fossil fuel industry. So they, I think, are most known for their very conservative, ultra-conservative beliefs. Back in 1980, David Koch ran for vice president on the Libertarian Party ticket. And so we know a lot about his political beliefs through that. He wanted to abolish the minimum wage. He wanted to abolish corporate taxes. He wanted to get rid of Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security. And most of the best, you know, most of the New Deal reforms and the social era reforms in the last 60 years. That's who David Koch is and his brother Charles.
The movie goes into the Citizens United decision of 2010. And it's not that there was no influence of corporate money before that. There was a significant influence from wealthy individuals and corporations before 2010. But what has happened since then in terms of corporate political spending to influence elections and the Koch brothers in particular?
Well, there are always ways to get money into elections. There's always corporate interests vying, you know, to buy the loyalty of politicians running for office. No doubt about that. What happened with Citizens United is that decision, that Supreme Court ruling, lifted the ban on corporations donating from their general treasuries. It used to be that corporations were limited to donating from their political action committees. But in the aftermath of Citizens United, they could just dip into their general treasuries and donate in outside spending. Now, I'm not talking about direct spending to candidates, but in outside spending, they could spend as much as they wanted to in support of a candidate. The Citizens United also lifted some of the blackout period in terms of electioneering, and it just created this flood of money that we've all experienced, that we've all seen firsthand. Much of that money goes into broadcast ads to try to sway public opinion and try to either support or defeat a particular candidate. And the Kochs spent a whole bunch of money in 2012. It was about more than $400 million in that election. It was their own money. It was money they spent through front groups like Americans for Prosperity. And it was also money that they had raised through their political networking. They're, I think, on track to spend about $125 million in this midterm election. And, you know, they are the big spender that not only is helping to determine who wins in these elections, but who gets to run in the first place.
Yeah, and there was a whole section in your movie, in your documentary, devoted to the candidate Buddy Romer, who was a Republican candidate. He'd been a governor of Louisiana, who was really not allowed to run, apparently because of money. What happened?
Well, Betty Romer was a former governor of Louisiana and a former congressman, represented his state in the U.S. Congress, and eminently qualified to run for president. And he conducted a very different campaign than the other Republicans in the race. First of all, he limited donations, direct donations that he would accept, to $100 or less. In the age of super PACs, this was sort of heretical, and he suffered because of it. Not only did he limit his donations, but he, you know, a big platform of his campaign was to get money out of elections. And not only was his voice sort of drowned out by the voices that were super empowered by this corporate money and money of billionaires, he couldn't even get on any of the debates, on any of the more than 20 debates that happened around the country. He couldn't muster enough money to get on the debate platform, because ultimately that was what it was about. You had to have raised a certain amount of money to qualify to get on the debates.
Another piece of the picture is not only corporate spending, but disclosure. What has happened to this disclosure aspect, and why is it important?
Well, the Citizens United ruling from the Supreme Court said that disclosure was very important. Even as they opened the floodgates to all this money, they did, you know, say that disclosure was really important, that Congress had to beef up these laws. Well, the Disclose Act was blocked by the House Republicans, and so there has been so many ways to get money into the elections without being able to trace, you know, a penny of it. And so what happens in this day and age is that, look, corporations don't oftentimes want to declare which candidate they're supporting or which issue they're backing, because they're worried about the backlash for their brand. But what they can do is they can make donations to, you know, nonprofits, to social welfare organizations, essentially laundering their money. And those donations then go on to form electioneering campaigns. And you can't trace it back to those corporations or those billionaires. So it's pretty appalling that voters can watch an ad on TV and never be able to figure out who is really behind that ad. I mean, it might be Americans for Apple Pie. It might be, you know, Americans for Prosperity. But who the heck are those entities? Now, we know that Americans for Prosperity, which is in every state almost, you know, in the country, and is conducting this state-by-state campaign, they were founded and they're lavishly funded by Charles and David Koch. But there's so many other organizations that, you know, we don't know where the money comes from. And even with Americans for Prosperity, we know the Koch brothers give money to that organization. We don't know where else their funding comes from, because they don't have to declare, because the IRS won't, you know, doesn't make them.
You talk about the Koch brothers' conservative agenda, ultra-conservative agenda, but there's conservative and there's conservative, in other words, in Wisconsin, which is featured in the movie The Politics of Wisconsin and Scott Walker, we meet a lot of what you might call more salt-of-the-earth conservatives, and we find some of those folks really conflicted because their interests are really antithetical to these other people who also call themselves conservatives.
Right, because I think the Kochs are extremists. They're fringe, you know, libertarians. David Koch tried to run for office and got, I think, you know, a very small percentage of the vote, maybe 1%. And so he joined the Republican Party and began to change the face of the Republican Party. I think that most of his views are radical. They're extreme. They're not, you know, mainline conservative views. And so we feature in our film, in Citizen Koch, the faces and the voices of Republicans throughout the state who feel betrayed by their own party and feel that their party's been hijacked by the likes of David and Charles Koch and other billionaires who are setting the agenda for the state. And I think what we've discovered, that this is really not a partisan issue. This is really not about Democrats versus Republicans. This is about the wealthiest and the corporate interests that they own dictating public policy and rigging our electoral system to benefit them at the expense of the rest of us.
So you talk about extremist and fringe. What exactly are the policies that they want? I mean, we see a weakening of unions, which are one of the few non-corporate power blocks and sources of campaign money in the United States. I mean, is it as simple as they just want to make as much money as they can?
Well, I mean, I think that they're quite good at that. I mean, when we started filming in 2011, the Kochs collective network, so David and Charles together, had $50 billion. And in 3 years, their net worth doubled. So they personally own $100 billion. This is not their industries. This is themselves. This is their, you know, their fortune. Well, at the same time, they want to abolish minimum wage, the federal minimum wage. And every time a minimum wage statute has come up, you know, seek to hike the minimum wage, they've put money into opposing it. That's just downright, I think, you know, greed, frankly. They want to get rid of, you know, they want to privatize our public services. They want to privatize our libraries, our post office, our schools, our prisons. And I think that they want to get rid of, you know, our social safety net. So we're talking about Social Security. We're talking about Medicare, Medicaid. They put a lot of money into, you know, trying to bring down Obamacare. And I think they want to enrich themselves. And they don't seem to care about the most vulnerable in society, or frankly, middle-class Americans.
It's such a selfish agenda. Why does anybody buy it?
Well, that's a very good question, and that's part of what we were looking to understand as we set out across you know, the heartland to try to answer these questions. Why would middle-class Americans and ordinary folk be, you know, helping in the Tea Party to promote the agenda of the billionaires? I think we understood quite well why the billionaires wanted to hijack the Tea Party, but it wasn't clear to us, you know, why the Tea Party was carrying their water. And look, I think some of it has to do with fear-mongering and using race as a way to get people to organize against their own self-interest, you know, race-baiting, red-baiting, which is a very old trick that these guys have employed, you know, back in the 50s and 60s and now. And I think it's no accident that the Tea Party gained a lot of, got a lot of traction just as, you know, President Obama was elected into office, the first African-American president. So, I mean, that's certainly part of it. I think also, you know, after our economic crisis, all Americans were hurting and feeling really betrayed by the financial powers that be, by the banks. And, you know, Main Street wasn't bailed out, but Wall Street was. So there was certainly, you know, a populist uprising. The trick is, though, that it was hijacked, I think, by these corporate interests, by these billionaires.
The vast amounts of money that go into political campaigns, that goes toward broadcast ads, TV and radio and other things, it doesn't always work, as the election of 2012 showed us. What's going on? Like, how effective is money, do you think?
Well, it depends on what you think working is. I mean, look, 90% of the time, the candidate with the most money wins, and the candidate with the most money behind them, whether direct spending or indirect spending, wins. But even in the cases where that candidate doesn't win, that money, that pool of money out there, helps to determine who's going to run in the first place. I mean, the Kochs don't have to write a check. All they have to do is tap their checkbook, and immediately all sorts of candidates that might otherwise have put themselves in the race just go away. I mean, why are you going to bother if you know that millions of dollars, tens of millions of dollars, potentially could be deployed against you? It's sort of a losing battle. So I think that it narrows our choices of candidates that are willing to put themselves into office. And I think all this money that gets deployed, particularly in advertising, helps to define the public policy debate. So much of these ads misinform voters about the issues at stake. And no matter who gets into office, they inherit, you know, all this and misinformation that's been put out there. So I really think these ads are very sinister, and the spending hurts all of us, not just the candidate who wins or loses.
It's also a really sad statement about the kind of pathetic nature of American democracy that political debates are being defined in one-minute commercials on television.
Well, that's right. I think, look, a lot of countries have force broadcasters to provide free airtime for candidates. That's one solution to this campaign's arms race, where candidates wouldn't have to pay. And you know, some countries actually limit the amount of time that candidates can campaign. You know, imagine if our presidential race lasted 3 weeks instead of, you know, 3 years. I mean, it's. I think a lot of us would be very happy about that. The threat of these ads is also, I think, that it demoralizes the public. I think so many of us just get sick and tired of all this garbage that we see and hear, and I think it turns people off from voting altogether.
Your film, Citizen Coke, we're talking to Tia Lesson, the co-producer and co-director of this documentary, Citizen Coke, was not shown on public television, which it had been slated to show on public television on PBS, because David Koch was a large donor to public television. Tell us that story.
Well, that's right. We've been filming our Citizen Coke for quite a while and in and out of the editing room. And we approached an agency on the West Coast that is a public agency that funds documentaries like ours. And they actually were really enthusiastic about the film, and they offered us $150,000 in finishing funds and a public broadcast partnership. So we were really thrilled about that. We thought this would be a perfect place to broadcast the film on free public television. And we were in partnership for about 6 or 7 months. They'd seen rough cuts of the film. They were really enthusiastic. They especially loved our focus on the Republican voters in Wisconsin. But then overnight, everything changed. And we actually, you know, were really stunned. They started making these demands on us. They wanted us to change the name of the film. Well, specifically to take the word Coke out of the name of the film. They didn't have a problem with the word citizen. And they wanted us to take a lot of the references to Dave and Charles Koch out of the film, you know, and this really surprised us. And well, ultimately, you know, we found out why. David Koch is on the board of trustees of two of the biggest public television stations in the country, in Boston at GBH and in New York at WNET. And at the time that our film was in the pipeline, he was dangling a seven-figure donation there and at WNET in New York, and the station was cultivating that. And basically, our film was killed, and funding for our film and the public broadcast partnership for the film was killed because they didn't want to do anything to upset David Koch and to scare him off from making this big donation. We were heartbroken. We are public television devotees. We pledge during pledge drive. We care about our local station, and it was just so. I think it was just so stunning to us that they made this choice to protect their high dollar donor rather than to give the public this film. We turned to Jane Mayer at The New Yorker, who did a great investigative piece and got people on the record to talk about what had happened with our film and the funding of the film. And then we mounted a Kickstarter campaign last summer because we were $150,000 short of being able to finish the film. We were in massive debt. And about 3,500 people came to our rescue with donations of, on average, $50 or less. And they saved the day, and they joined us in this movement to get this film out far and wide. And now here we are. We're opening all over the country. We're in Santa Fe this weekend. We are in theaters, 60, 70 other theaters throughout the country. And we're really excited, finally, that this film is getting to the silver screen.
What is your hope for American democracy in the face of the current conditions, including the Citizens United decision?
Well, gosh, I mean, part of me is quite demoralized, you know, especially with our personal experience with, you know, public television caving here because of the, you know, cultivating the big money of the Kochs. You know, for me, if our most trusted public institution can be corrupted by the Koch money, you know, what institution won't be corrupted by it? I don't know. I do believe in public funding for our public media. I think that's so important because the more money that we can give to support our local television and radio stations, the the less sway these billionaires will hold and these corporations will hold, you know, over our public media. And that's one of the reasons why we wanted to support KSFR and have this fundraiser and donate our proceeds to you guys, because we so believe in public media and we think, you know, the small dollar donors can save it. In terms of our democracy, I think the same thing is true. I think small dollar donors and individual voters are going to save us. I think public financing the elections is key. It's quite important, just like public financing the public media. And I think that we need to press for accountability so we can at least, even as this money is out there, can follow a money trail. We can know who's spending it, and we can expose this spending. Ultimately, the spending has to stop, because our politicians should be accountable to the voters. They shouldn't be accountable to the folks that are writing checks, you know, to underwrite their campaigns. It's just wrong. It's undemocratic, and I think it hurts us all. So I think I feel like they wouldn't be trying to. They wouldn't be spending so much money on these elections if our vote wasn't such a threat. And there's so many more regular Americans than there are billionaires and corporations. So I think as long as all of us stay engaged in the political process and we show up and vote and we ensure that others have the right to vote, I think that's our best hope, really, for the future.
Tia Lesson is co-producer and co-director of the documentary Citizen Coke. The film opens this Friday at the CCA here in Santa Fe, and there's a special screening tonight at 7:30, which is a benefit for KSFR. For more information, you can go to ksfr.org and ccasantafe.org. Tia, thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Oh, it's been fun. Thanks so much. And we're looking forward to being in Santa Fe this weekend. And thanks so much for supporting the release of the film.